The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill this afternoon for our consideration is House Bill 115. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 115, introduced by Representative Teeters, an act relating to charter schools application. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 115 do pass. And there are no standing committee amendments, and I will explain the bill. Last year, when the committee during the interim did some work on charter school applications, and we created 21-3307, throughout that process, we created the specifications for what the charter school applications would contain and what that phased-in application process would look like. One thing that we failed to do in the legislation, however, was to prescribe a uniform charter school application. And because of that, the districts are still able to control what that application looks like. This bill standardizes that process and allows the state superintendent to create what the exact form will look like, and it should eliminate a lot of the confusion right now. If there is a district, for instance, that is not pro-charter school, they can put certain constraints on the application that would make it impossible for a charter school to actually be formed, and this standardizes the process. So I would stand for questions. Our intention was to fix this last year. I really do view this bill as a cleanup bill.
Thank you, Chairman Teeters. Any further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Teeters' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 115 do pass, signify by aye. Opposed, nay, or no. House Bill 115 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 52. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 52, introduced by Representative Wallace, an act relating to education, charter school restriction. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters, no, Connolly. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 52 do pass. There are no amendments, and I will turn the sponsorship over to the good representative from the Northern Powder River Basin.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your inboxes, there is a two-pager handout about charter school restrictions and an explanation. And the first part of that is really just giving you some background on what charter schools really are. They are public schools. They are relieved of some of the restrictions of other schools based on in return for some accountability, and it gives them the capability of really doing some innovative things that can be very beneficial to Wyoming. We've had a charter school law on the books for 15 or more years, but in that time, we still have only two schools in the entire state. So what this bill does is written into that statute. There's a reason why there's only a couple, and that's because the requirements are, the standard is very, very high, as they should be. However, there are also some roadblocks that have prevented very dedicated groups of parents and teachers working together who have literally spent innumerable hours and many thousands of dollars to develop a very well thought out program and present it only to run headlong into one of these roadblocks. So, addressing the specific roadblocks, the bill itself just simply says, we're going to take this section out. So, here are the things that are in that section that we are going to take out. First of all, let me read you this from the purpose statement that is in the existing law. It is the purpose of this article to provide opportunities for teachers, parents, pupils, and community members, and I emphasize and underline this, to establish and maintain schools that operate independently from the existing school district structure as a method to improve pupil learning, increase learning opportunities for all students, encourage the use of different and innovative teaching methods, create new professional opportunities for teachers, and provide parents and pupils with expanded choices in the types of educational opportunities that are available within the public school system. So that's the purpose. And here we have some prohibitions. The first one being that at first glance seems, well, what's the matter with that? Because it's saying that this article shall not prohibit any private person or organization from funding or providing other assistance for the establishment or operation of a charter school established pursuant to this article when the district board determines the funding or assistance is compatible with the mission of the district. The last piece of that sentence is the problem. Because that is giving there's nothing in any statute anywhere that prohibits someone from providing or donating things to any school. But here, we are giving the district board the veto power to say, even though you, Mr. Bill Gates, oh, richest man in the world, even you are going to provide a wonderful gift to this startup charter school, but we don't think that program is compatible with the mission of the district. Therefore, we're not going to allow you to give the money to the school. That's the problem with that piece. The second piece that we are taking out says, no charter shall be granted under this article if it is determined that its sole purpose is to avoid consolidation or closure of any school or district. For purposes of this subsection, consolidation or closure applies regardless of grade configuration, building location, or school or district name. So, what does that mean? That means when a small town down in the southeast part of our state was facing the closure and consolidation of their school. Their parents and teachers wanted to come together and figure out a charter school where they could provide an education for their children in their home community, and this statute prevented them from doing it. Another small community on the western side of the state faces the same threat at this very moment, where it is being determined that their school may close and that their elementary kids are going to have to be bused some distance away to a different school. So I just feel this is a blatant injustice that would prevent a community that has dedicated teachers, dedicated parents, folks who want to get together and figure out how to make a program work that will work for them. That's the best possible scenario, and we should not be standing in the way of that happening. Thirdly, it says, no charter application shall be considered from any person, group, or organization proposing to convert a private school or a non-public home-based educational program into a charter school. And my question is, why not? You know, a family that does not believe that the existing school system is meeting the needs of their students, or a community that has a school that that they believe works better for their children to prevent them from forming a charter school. So long as they, you know, they still have to abide by the constitutional requirements and the provisions that are in place for any public school in the state. But if they're willing to take that step and make sure that they comply with those things, why wouldn't we let them? And then the next provision that would be deleted is, no charter school shall enter into a contract with an independent management company without the prior written consent of the district board. The school district shall be a third-party beneficiary of any management contract approved by the district board. Again, the main problem with this is without the prior written consent of the district board. Remember that the purpose of a charter school is to establish and maintain schools that operate independently from existing school districts. This is in exact cross purposes with that purpose. And so it seems, and it does, it's that veto hammer that has been used against efforts to create these schools. And finally, for applications filed on or after July 1st, 2007, charter application shall not be considered from any person, group, or organization that has previously filed a charter application within a 12-month period and the application was subsequently denied. Computation of the 12-month period under this subsection shall begin on the date the denied application was filed with the district board. There have been a number of efforts to create good, solid charter schools in this state. They have spent literally thousands and thousands of dollars pulling together the coalition of parents, the coalition of educators, the experts that they needed to found their programs on, and it takes a year at least to prepare this very rigorous application and present it to your local school board. And at this point, the school district board really doesn't have any obligation. They can deny it on any reason or no reason. And this says you have to start all over and wait a year before you can progress any farther. And it's just incredibly onerous. So, for all these reasons, seems to me like the prudent and humane thing to do for families and educators who are trying to form these schools is to repeal these roadblocks. And with that, I would stand for questions.
Thank you. Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this bill being brought to us, but unlike what normally I would say, I'm surprised you didn't go further with this. You know, I looked at your heading and everything in your bill, and if you go through this chapter on charter schools, there are all kinds of things in there you could just as well repeal. For example, I'd like to ask the sponsor, why didn't you consider including repealing 21-3-311? This is the one that says any charter school shall participate in the Wyoming retirement system to the extent as if it were a public school within the district. Now, what business, you know, this was passed in 2001, so there's probably somebody around here that was party to this thing, but of what purpose is this in developing a charter school? And there's another one up here, well, they're just all the way through here, and I look at your title, your bill, and repealing restrictions on the establishment of a charter school. I'm just wondering if we can augment this in an amendment without going against the rules. Because I certainly, as a start, that stood out like a sore thumb to me, that you would have, us getting in the faces of a charter school company and saying you got to be in the South Dakota retirement system, because I don't even know if it's legal to do that. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have tried some rather comprehensive charter school rewrites in the past that didn't go very well. And if it is allowable in the rules, I would wholeheartedly welcome that amendment and any others of a similar nature as a part of this bill.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I passed out to the members the Section 303 that is proposed to be repealed. I think it just hit your boxes so you actually can see the statute if you don't have a statute book. My concern here, and I stand here really with the school facilities issue in mind, and I think many of the things that were just talked about in the presentation, and I don't think, you know, any folks on this body has been real supportive of charter schools over the years, and I think we'll continue to do so. But I think a lot of those things were addressed in the previous bill that we passed out here on first reading. But a couple concerns, I guess, and I'm just asking about what the testimony maybe was in committee or, you know, what kind of things were looked at. But it really goes through really each one of these. But as far as Section B there, if you're looking at that section 21.3.303, we chose not to grant charters for the sole purposes to avoid the consolidation or closure of a school or district. Now, I want you to think about that thing. We're in a tremendous building boom in our schools. Every town then has built a new school and closed an old school. Many of these are old, kind of historic schools that people went to themselves for two or three generations. And there's a pushback on that. But I'll just tell you, when we do a charter school, we're responsible for the facilities. So at what point do we say, at some point we can't do everything. And I think if you look at Wyoming and you think, and you hear all these stories, we spend the most per pupil in the United States. We spend $16,000, $17,000 per pupil. But most of those averages are in our small communities. We have chosen, this body has chosen, unlike our neighbors in the Dakotas and Nebraskas and Eastern Plains of Colorado, to keep our small towns alive. We've chosen to do that. We operate very small schools that most states have closed down decades ago. Because it's not been the policy of this body to start shutting down our small Wyoming towns. And we all know, you lose your school, there goes your community. But at what point, this doesn't really apply to even a community. It's a school within a district. So at what point are we going to, now that school construction is a state responsibility because of our lawsuits, at what point do we say we got to say goodbye to this old school? Or is it now the whim of a community just to say, well, we want a charter school here. And state, you have to come in and get this up to our new bills coming through, the modern standards. It'll be judged just like any other school. I just don't think that's the right way to go. I just don't think we have the resources to do that. I guess so. I'd like some discussion on that point. And then Part C there, Paragraph C on 21.3.303, right in the middle there. So can we convert a private school? I think we have a beautiful private school in my community. Can that be converted to a charter school and now the state accepts the facilities responsibilities for that school? How about, and then it says homebound, or I want to say home-based educational programming. So now homeschools can get facilities money. I mean, where does it end? This deal, these have been here and we've worked through these each legislative session for a reason. And once you just kind of throw things out, I think, be careful because we'll have unintended consequences. So I guess I'm just wondering about the interim study on this, or there's been some discussion, or what the what the testimony was. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising on in support of the bill, we have a rigorous application process right now, and it goes back and forth. It takes months to work your way through this application process. We're not going to have some willy-nilly idea of these people getting together with 13 kids that are homeschooled, and they're going to get together and form a charter school, and the state's going to have to go out and build this school. That's not going to happen. We have protections in the application process to ensure that that doesn't happen. We need to have a good conversation about facilities and the role of facilities with charter schools, because the proponents of charter schools don't need or don't desire to be treated the same when it comes to facilities. So for the state to decide that you're entitled to this and we have to do it for you because we're mandated by the court, I don't necessarily buy that argument. But we do need to have a policy discussion about facilities with charter schools. The bottom line is these are hindrances to the formation of charter schools. And if you look at our charter school laws, we are ranked second worst in the nation with charter schools. And I think we can do better than that in Wyoming. We need a little competition in this system, and I view this as part of the reform efforts that we're looking at right now. If we can require and force the local school districts to compete a little bit for those kids, and to step the game up a little bit, I think that's fully acceptable. We need a little bit of market economics in our educational system. It'd do us all a little bit of good. And this takes us a little bit farther in that direction. So I would ask for your support of the bill.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been having quite a tussle with this for 4 years sitting on the Education Committee. And I will say, having looked at the charter school application, it is big and it is hard to get through. So I thought that we had helped out in the handout you have, 21-3303D. It said there's a 12-month waiting period after you've been denied. So as it was really tough to get one, but I think we passed some legislation last year that spoke to that, trying to make the application work better. And I think this bill just says we don't want to work anymore with the school districts. We want to just be on our own, and we'll take care of it. I was just talking to one of the proponents of the charter schools this morning, and I said, can the districts work with the charter schools? Is there some way that we can get the kids that want to be in charter schools and do the very best for them working with the districts? And I think the position of this bill says, nope, we're not working with districts anymore. They've been too hard to work with, so we're shutting off all discussion, and we're going to go on our own. We're going to create a whole new set of rules just for charter schools. I just would like to hear a little bit more of the dialogue of, can we work together and get this done? Section B there. If the state comes into a small school, and we have some in our area, and just says, wow, folks, we just can't afford to have 5 kids going to this school right now, and we are only 20 miles away from a school that these kids can be in, and so the state determines in its best interest that we need to close this one down, the charter school folks are now saying, nope, we're going to build a school here and we'll take care of our own kids. And so the state, you don't have anything to do. I guess I just want to hear from the bringers of the bill and the education committee. I thought we were going to try to work together, and this doesn't look like work together to me. So I wouldn't mind hearing some discussion on that. Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to rise and to share a few points here. I serve on the School Facilities Commission along with the good representative that just spoke. It's a crucial factor we're looking at here, ladies and gentlemen. the education system in the state of Wyoming is under court mandate. That's what brought it to the point where we're building facilities. I can stand here and tell you we've spent millions and millions of dollars on school facilities. We have established a policy for how we're going to build these things. We have a selection criteria. We've met repeatedly on the various structures throughout the state. At the present time, we have about half a dozen of them that are in, you might say, in the chute, that are going to be built. Some of the architect work is done. Construction work will soon start on it. Now, that's a little background. As you look at this, I'm not against charter schools in any way, shape, or form, but what this bill is doing is striking all of the, you might say, prohibitory language of charter schools. But that may well be, but they've got to have a place to meet. Where are we going to go with this thing in terms of construction of facilities for the charter school? I submit to you, before we move on a piece of legislation like this, there has to be agreement on the millions of dollars that's at stake here. Charter schools have a place. They need to be in our education system. But until we resolve the facilities, because this is removing it completely from the school board here for the charter schools, and we have been meeting with the 48 districts, their superintendents, their boards, their members, and that kind of thing, we have not, to my knowledge, met with charter school boards or facilities. That has to be clarified. I urge us not to move on 52, but put this either into a study or some kind of a way that we can make sure the facilities are being evaluated, because the state cannot afford to have a dual system of construction of buildings.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me speak to just a couple of points that have been made by some of the speakers that I'm going to push back on, and I think there might be some misinformation that's going around. First of all, this bill, which I am in support of, is not changing any of the process that a potential charter school makes with the district. There is no change. So your local folks that you elect to your school board that you have so much trust and faith in are still going to be negotiating with that charter school through the whole process to determine everything, nuts and bolts, papers, paper clips, all the way up and down to the building and down. So this doesn't change any of that. The gatekeeper is still in place, an extremely hefty and very effective gatekeeper in Wyoming, by the way. And you all, those of you who've been here for a while, know that I've been here at this podium more than once to try to remove them as the gatekeeper, because they are exceptionally, exquisitely effective at keeping the number of charter schools really small in Wyoming. This bill doesn't change any of that. The good speaker that was to my left saying that suddenly they're no longer worried about the district, that's just not true. The district is still the only person who can authorize a charter school. So this bill has nothing to do with that process. Let me talk about school facilities. Because that has been a red herring that gets thrown up time and time and time again. Folks, we are not starting a charter school because we grew a bunch of new kids. Just boom, all of a sudden popped up hundreds of millions of new little kids that we just had no idea were there. We are talking about public school kids that were sitting in a public school building that now may be going to a different school, still within, if your district allows it, the same district. So we aren't adding a huge number of new kids that we're going to have to build 60 million new schools for. We are simply saying that at the most basic level, the level of the parent and the teacher and the child in a district, if they decide that they want to form a charter school for various number of reasons, which, by the way, who charter schools do for less than the average public school kid. If they want to do that, we're going to let them. And quite frankly, the argument that wasn't end up here about square footage and all this other stuff is a reason why you want charter schools, because they do it for less. The practical application on the ground in Wyoming in the charter schools that we have today, we didn't build them new buildings. That has not happened in this state yet. No one can rise to the podium right now and tell me that we've built a new building for a charter school. We have not. They've gone out and negotiated with private entities to get grants. They used an old vacant, I can't say the name, but it's the place we all go to get all of our stuff. From another state. They went and negotiated an old building and used that. These are all sort of nebulous threats that hang that are a really good way to give lip service to, I like charter schools as long as they don't exist in Wyoming. So if you're really serious about the idea of public charter schools, let's remove these restrictions. And let's allow at the very basic level communities with the district still as the gatekeeper, a very effective gatekeeper, to make those decisions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, first off, I'd like to say there's three charter schools, two in the state, two of which are in my county, one of which is wanting to consolidate with the school district and become a K-12. But back to what the good gentleman from House Bill 37's concerns were, and as this, charter schools, we in Wyoming, we still fund charter schools. We pay the major maintenance. We pay the cost of the rent, of the lease, of the buildings that they have. All of these costs that are associated with these schools, we pick up because they are a public school. They have to comply with all the testing requirements, all of the other things that go through. So that was what I believe one of the concerns that the good gentleman was, and I don't put words in his mouth, was talking about. We do not, and we have not, it has been up for discussion, build charter schools. The charter school people have come when I was chair of the Education Committee and said, we don't want you to build us a school. We'd rather do it the way we're doing it. But we still pick up the cost of whatever those buildings are and those types of things. So I wanted to explain a little bit about where some of this information came from and how it is for the body. You can do whatever you want here with the applications. The good gentleman is right that talked earlier about this. We still have all the entire process has to go through. The prohibitions are what's gone. Some of those prohibitions were put in there because it was felt at the time that such as the schools, such as starting a school to keep from consolidation. And I'll give you an example of that. And in my county, we had a school. It was a brand new school. It was built with AML funding because it was in the town where you all like to go to get a steak. And it was a coal mine town. Well, as the population aged, school population went down. All of a sudden, we were busing kids from my school district to that school so we could justify the teachers that it took to keep them both together. Finally, the district decided we're just going to bus them the other direction. So there's a brand new school sitting there that's now leased out to other people, but it was built with our money. Those were some of the concerns that drove some of these prohibitions. But you can work your pleasure on this. Just be careful of what you ask for.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm on and in support of this bill. We've got a rigorous application process. Even if you look at the handout that was passed out earlier, but below the section that this this bill is set to repeal, you can see is entitled Charter School Requirements Authority. There still is all kinds of statute on the rigorous requirements for charter schools. If you vote against this bill, what you're saying is we've just implemented a very rigorous, very intense, very complete process that a school has to go through to be approved as a charter school. But then, in addition to the process, we don't trust the process. The process doesn't work because we need to impose all these additional restrictions on who's even allowed to start the process. That's all these restrictions are. They're restrictions on somebody being allowed to start the process. Removing them doesn't make it easier to get approved. You still have to go through the rigorous process. You still have to have the legitimate concerns addressed for everything, including facilities, including pay. It just removes barriers to make it easier for people to start the process. To say we've got a process, but we don't trust the process and need to put restrictions on who can start the process, that's a violation of common sense. If this is how we're going to set up our education system, it's no wonder that the performance isn't where we need to be. We need to restore common sense. We need to trust the process. If the process doesn't work, then the that's what needs to be addressed, is make the process more rigorous. But if we've got a process, we need to trust it. It's ridiculous to suggest anything else. Please vote for the bill.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I sway back and forth on this issue like a pendulum on a clock. I started my career as an alternative high school teacher. I got to start a school at the very bottom. There was four people, no books. We were in a trailer, and the trailer was not even leveled right to where that you couldn't keep a ball on the carpet where it wouldn't roll to one side of the room. And we built a darn good school. And what happened was is we were able to take one segment of the population within a boom period of time in the county that has sweet water. But what happens is there's roadblocks. And like a previous speaker said, there's more and more roadblocks. I know you're tired of hearing me as a teacher and offer that as my credentials, but that's where my perspective comes back from. I said that I would never say that students have changed during my career. And if you would have asked me that 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, I would say that students haven't changed. But what has happened is our society has changed. How they get information, how they like to learn, the electronics, the flash, how much information our students are getting every day. And to some students, that's the only way that they learn. What we have, and pardon me, I've used this before too, is we have large box schools, much like what we have in department stores, I guess I can say that. And what happens in my classes every day, and I went back to put grades in last weekend, there is an element within, I think, every schools that have people who need a little different environment and a little different way of learning. I would love to say that schools like to change, but I, according to my wife, have been teaching 33 years, and probably one of the biggest resistance to change are school districts. And we are very masterful at coming up with different names and different programs for the same stuff. Charter schools give us an opportunity to where that we can try to do something different. So why am I going back and forth? Well, charter schools are also very expensive, and we've talked about facilities. When we start talking about different kinds of learning techniques, there's going to be more costs. And then what will happen also is that the body down the hall is talking about accountability, and they want to account everybody the same way. I've already spoken that we can't, or not everybody can learn the same way and probably demonstrate the mastery of what we want in a system. I think that charter schools are a way to go. I have alternative high school experience, and that's in many states is what a charter school is. I agree with my colleague from the Valley who says, why don't we cooperate within the district to create these schools? And I think that is a question that needs to be answered. I would love to sit up here and say, you know, this is the way that we should go. But I think we have to start to realize a couple things. One, we have to take down roadblocks. Two, we have to provide initiatives. And three, we have to realize that they are going to look different than what our schools are today. And we have to embrace that if we're going to have an effective charter schools. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm up here only to remind you one thing, that we are repealing an entire section. And I can't emphasize enough, if you haven't read that section and you don't understand that section, then you should be obliged to vote against this until you understand that section. Because I think after you read that section, you might not want to support this measure. Thank you.
Representative Wallace. I apologize. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I think we can have the good bringer of this bill go last and somehow. I asked a question about facilities, and I'm not sure I heard an answer. I heard an opinion, but I'll tell you what will happen and what currently happens with our charter schools. This is the policy. They're going to get a building score. They're going to be scored just like any other building. They're going to go on the needs index, and then there'll be a remedy if they rise high enough on the needs index. We currently do that in the largest charter across the mountain here to the east. We pay the full lease on that private building, do all that, and we're happy to do it. I mean, that's a big part of that. But I think, so when I asked the question about facilities, I heard most of the pushback come really on Section A about prohibiting funding from outside groups. I heard the analogy of the richest man in the world, although most of his work's done on public schools and cameras in the classroom. But I guess so. If that's a part that you want to take out, then take out Part A. If that's where the real rub is, take out Part A. So my question was really to Part B and C. Never heard anything back. The effect of that will be is that some of these little tiny old schools that need to be demolished are going to be turned into charters, and we're going to pay the bill for it. And so there's only so big a pie. So I guess, you know, we can talk about opinions, but that's the fact if they become a public charter on this. So that's B and C in my mind. I think those should stay. If you want to take out A, hey, I think that's great. We should incentivize that. Folks want to donate a large donation to get something going. And I agree. I think the application process will provide enough rigor. And particularly, I think, you know, there's some streamlining in the previous bill we passed. That's the problem. All these charters have all these different regulations, each district. Now it's going to go through the state superintendent if that bill is successful. Okay, so B and C, I never got an answer on, I guess. I'd like more, I guess, if there's any testimony on that. And then my next question, really, is about Section D that's proposed for repeal. So we're going to take public money, I guess, away, and we'll allow it to be spent on an outside management company. Now, has anybody ever looked and researched on these management companies? Because it's done in other states. What does that mean? What is a management company? Now, a management company might say they're not for profit, but they are there to make a profit. And has anybody looked at how these management companies have operated in other states? What is the track record? Do we have the answers to that? They're out there. I was wondering if that was part of the testimony on this. So if that's, I think, a legitimate concern. Now, Part E that's proposed for repeal. This was a lot of the pushback, one of my questions on facilities. If this is a real problem, take that part out. I think, though, it's going to change. These are, you know, take that out and give trust in the previous bill that we just passed. That'll go through rules and regulations, and that will be fixed with the previous bill. So take A and E out. But I would encourage us not to take B, C, and D out. Those are put in there for a reason, for Wyoming circumstances. We don't want our precious public education school foundation dollars to go to an out-of-state management company to make profit to take away from our schools. Doesn't make any sense. So I guess to sum that, I guess my question on BNC and facilities, we know what the policy is. We're going to pay the bill. That's fine. If we establish charters, we're glad to do it. And the ones we have, as the chairman of TRW said, we pay it, and we're glad to do it. I'd be cautious of D. I would be cautious of D. So if this wants to be amended and come back with just pulling A and E and out, I'll get up here and, you know, we can all sing Kumbaya over it. And I think that's where most of the pushback comes from folks. But be careful, because words are important in statute, and they've been thought out and they've been worked on over the years. And just to, bam, knock out a whole session, one of us puts it on a bill, and I guess I just want to know more about the testimony. And so I guess I'd like a little more clarification on these out-of-state management companies.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, this whole thing about facilities is an interesting conversation. But to say that we need to keep these arbitrary bad reasons in place to prevent charter schools from forming because we don't know how we're going to deal with facilities is a ridiculous argument in my mind. We need to address that through school facilities, and I think the good chairman of school facilities ought to take an interest in that. What we need to do is, as we prioritize those lists, talk about it. But there's no one in the charter school proponents that want us to build them schools. So they haven't requested it. They're not in the queue. They're not on the list. So that's really not an issue. I don't understand that argument, that whole line of logic. The bottom line is this section has been very effective in preventing us as a state from being able to move forward with a viable charter school system. There's no question about it. If you want to prevent charter schools from being a viable option in Wyoming, then go ahead and vote no on this bill, because that has been the policy of this institution. We wouldn't have created this section if the idea wasn't to prevent charter schools from happening. And it's worked quite effectively in preventing them. So, you know, we talk about all of our precious dollars in the foundation. You know, we're spending $1.6 billion right now. Reading proficiency in third grade is 33%. You know, if you're satisfied with that and those kind of statistics, let's go ahead and protect this sacred cow. But right now, in my opinion, this thing is going down the tank. You know, there are some real concerns about educational quality in the state of Wyoming. And for us to stand idly by and continue to protect the status quo is just beyond my comprehension. This is a simple, small step that we can take to make charter schools a viable option in Wyoming. And it takes us down that road. If we try it and it doesn't work, what have we really lost? We'll be right where we are, which is not in a good position. So I would ask you to support the bill. Thank you.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think when I wanted to come back to the podium, because the good speaker from number one on your plates, number one on your hearts, said that he didn't get his question answered. So, and I think I understand now where he's, some of his logic. So the concern here that we hear about school facilities, and just follow me through with this, is that, number one, we are going to have to pay for facilities. And so what I think we've all been saying, and we want to make sure you all understand, is that yes, once the rigorous gatekeeping process, and in Wyoming since 1992, that has happened three times. Once the rigorous gatekeeping process is done and you actually get chartered, again, that has happened three times in this state since 1992, and your public charter school opens, the charter schools, and of course, there is a negotiation in there. And if this body and the body down the hall and all the rest of us want to discuss in those negotiations taking out major maintenance or facilities dollars and saying that charter schools cannot receive them, let's have that discussion. I think we've all repeatedly come to the mic and said again and again that charter schools are not out there waiting because all they really want is a new school. What they want to do is implement innovative, exciting ways to educate children. What they want to do is get into their communities and get parents involved and educate kids. That's what they want. There's not some deep plan to get out there and get brand new shiny buildings. And I know we've been building a lot of buildings. I think what he is speaking to, however, is this idea that a small school district, and perhaps I think, and if I'm wrong, I hope that he will correct me, that in a small school district, that the actual elected board themselves, the gatekeeper, would want to do this as somehow in a way to game the system and get a new building. That's a totally different subject, because you still have the gatekeeper, and I don't know how you get around the gatekeeper unless you're telling me that the gatekeeper is in on this whole scheme to get a charter school, to get away from consolidation and get a new building. The only way you're going to get that is if your elected board, the gatekeeper, is in on that scheme. That's something that obviously, if it came up, we would have plenty of time to address. I don't know of any district, and you all know your elected boards. So unless you think that they would want to go in on that scheme, I don't really see that as even a remotely viable option. We would certainly, if it ever happened, would have to address it. There would be plenty of time to address it. The application process is over a year long. I don't think that a small school district could keep that a secret for very long, and obviously school facilities and all the other people would know that this was headed down the line. So So I hope that I think I'm following the concern or the logic behind school facilities is the reason that we should say no to all of this, because somehow we're going to suddenly be building a million different schools. And if I haven't, I know the good speaker at the front of the room there here will tell me I haven't answered his questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I don't think I've said new schools here. I think it was the proponents of this bill to talk new schools. I haven't said that one time. And I think if you read the statute, it talks about closure of schools or consolidations of school districts. That's what we're talking about. That's what I'm bringing to your attention. And we've done that for a reason, because we're closing a lot of schools in Wyoming, particularly when we build new ones. That's the thing behind that. Now, as far as arbitrary bad decisions, I'm not sure what that's about. We're under a court mandate. And we've done a lot of work to get this to be a fair system. But charter school kids have the right to good facilities just like any other public school kid. So I'm not going to support where we don't take care of our charter school kids and facilities. I would never support that. There are Wyoming citizens as well. So the facilities thing, let's be clear what we're talking about. This is in here to prevent establishing charters to simply as a way to avoid closing schools. That's something we ought to be concerned about. As far it was brought up about, I'm going to bring this up, I guess, as my time here on this floor, but it was talked about third proficiency. I'll just talk to you a little bit about third grade reading and eighth grade math tests in our NWEA, where we can compare against the rest of the country. Wyoming's been in the top 10 for the last 6 years. We're one of the few states that have improved in both areas, third grade reading, eighth grade math, two key components to how kids are doing. Wyoming's in the top 10. Now, how hard is PAWS? Well, I've got some good data, and they've just come out with that. Compare our state test to several other state tests, because we don't know how hard PAWS is. Well, I'll just compare it to the Wisconsin state test. The same boy in Wyoming and the same boy in or same kids in Wisconsin or Wyoming take the NWEA test, the same test, and then they take their state test. How they do? Well, the results show that a Wyoming student has to get in the 94th percentile. 94th percentile to be proficient, where the Wisconsin kid has to be in the 50th percentile. So be careful how we throw numbers out there. Wyoming kids are doing very well. Wyoming has the second highest percentage of high school graduates in the whole United States. I think only Vermont's higher than us. A lot of our kids are graduating. And our graduation rates have been like this. So when I sit here and listen to this drumbeat, I want it to really be based in fact. Okay? And I think we got to look at those things. ACT scores. Wyoming is right at the national average, just a little bit below, but we're one of three states that tests every junior. See, most states don't. Most states just test the college kids, the top 10%, top 20%. Wyoming, we test every kid. So there's a lot of things to be proud of in Wyoming education. Be careful that we don't go down this road, that we start making something that's really not true, and it becomes kind of a crowd fun thing to kind of carry torches about. You know, I'm going to stand up against that because it's not true. Now, about competition and about charter schools, I think we're all for it. Our legislature supported it. I come from a district of choice, and I get criticized about busing issues, but it's really not that big a deal in our town. My kids in my community can go to any school they want. That's a beautiful thing. I encourage all of your districts to do that. Now, back to this bill. So I'll just tell you what B and C mean. We are going to take care of these old school buildings. I didn't say anything about building new buildings. Be careful of that. That's a caution. And then I asked you about D, and I never got any response. What about these out-of-state management firms? That is my question now, and I'd like to see what the testimony is on that. What about out-of-state management firms? How much do they make? What are their results? I don't know. But those are questions we have to ask. And I hear the proponents of this bill. Really, most of the push is from sections A and E, about prohibiting folks coming in with donations, getting parent groups, getting all those folks. Why would we not support that? I don't have a problem. If the richest man in the world wants to come in and build a charter school, let's let him. And then E, some folks say that this 12-month waiting period is injurious. Well, let's get rid of it. But be careful of the B, C, and D, and I'm just here to sound a word of caution. I'd like more information on D. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In a real hurry, because I just have this back in the cobweb somewhere. We're looking at 21303. And so I just went in LSO and got them to type the whole thing. So I've got the whole packet of charter schools. And I think some of our questions would be a little bit answered reading this. We are getting rid of 21303, school, charter school prohibitions. But 21.3304 is the charter school requirements and authority. And I just had time to scan through this, so I want to read a couple of these. 304B, the charter school shall be a public school within the school district that grants its charter and shall be accountable to the school district board for the purposes of ensuring compliance with the applicable laws and charter provisions and requirements of the state constitution. Letter D, the charter school shall be administered and governed by the governing board in a manner agreed to by the charter school applicant and the school district. So I still think there's a little bit of, we're missing, and I was missing, a little bit of, we're taking out some prohibitions, but we're not taking out the requirements or the authority to work together, which is what I stood up here a little bit ago saying. There are some things in here that talk about the funding, and I would suggest, my recommendation would be, let's vote for this today. Everybody get hold of the charter school, the whole section, read it, and if it's different than I'm saying, then we have second reading and third reading to do some fixing on it. But I was a little misled, thinking, oh, we're just opening the gates with no school district authority, requirements, or accountability, and I'm just finding that that's not so. So that would be my recommendation. Thank you.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief, but I did want to touch on the concerns specifically raised by the good football coach from the center of the state. As far as letter B goes, if a charter school applies and the economics of not funding the school prevents it from being viable, that's a legitimate reason to turn them down on the process. But right now, with the restriction B in place, if a charter school wants to use a school building that was going to be closed, before they even start the process, we're saying, no, you're not allowed because of this restriction. We should at least give them the chance to present their case. If it's viable, if it saves the state money, that'll come out in the process. If it's not viable, that'll come out in the process. Why do we want to stop them from being allowed to apply simply because they want to use a building that's going to be closed? Section C, if a person has a great idea or a private school or a home-based educational program that works, and somebody wants to take that idea and say, we're going to use that as the basis for our charter, and then that's the genesis behind an idea for forming a charter school, that's how charter schools are supposed to work. They're supposed to take a creative idea that's working and form a charter for it. Why would we want to say, just because that idea came from a home-based system, you're not allowed to start the process? Again, we need to give them the chance to start the process. The process is there for a reason. And Section D, again, we want to look at different things. If it was going to be run by an independent management company from out of state and it didn't make sense, that's a very legitimate reason to shut down the school. But if there is an independent management company that makes sense, that's proven effective, that's proven that they run schools better and save the state money, why would we want to prevent them from starting the process? At least give them a chance to start the process, and if those ideas aren't viable, it won't pass the process. Again, we have a process for a reason. Let's not put restrictions on who's allowed to start the process.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to wrap this up. The statement was made that charter schools are very expensive. I would point out to you and can bring to you statistics and data from other states clearly showing that charter schools operate in some places on about half as much money as it requires in the typical school system. And the reason that they are able to operate so efficiently is because a charter school, by definition, may not be subject to some of the rules, regulations, and statutes that apply to other public schools. So being relieved of those regulations allows for some economies. But charter schools are unique. In this state, we have had efforts, unsuccessful efforts, to form schools that would have focused on a classical curriculum. We have had schools that were seeking to create a hands-on high school program where you actually learn all of your subjects, math, reading, writing, science, through the process of building something like building a house or creating a project where all of those curriculum pieces are folded into that program. So these are the kind of things that quite simply cannot be done in the traditional school system, as good as it is. And there are many students in this state who are not well served by the school system, as good as it is for quite a few of the students. What we know is that there are about a third of the kids who thrive in the typical school system, about a third of the kids who get along in the school system as it is, and about a third of the kids who struggle miserably and often drop out. So let's keep this on the issue. This is all about removing the roadblocks and not about changing the standards or lowering the bar or taking authority away from the existing elected school district boards.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Interesting debate. I've really enjoyed the various comments and the various approaches to this subject. We've talked a lot about process, and if anybody in this room has been vested in process and procedure, I would be one of those participants. But that's been with legislatures and legislative process and procedure, as opposed maybe to just to education. However, when we talk about that, why are we having this discussion? What's the bottom line? Is it the process? I think the bottom line is that there's an assumption here. The assumption is that the charter schools are better than public schools. And why does that kind of rankle me? Because the charter school, if they want a charter school, they can have it. Just don't ask for public funds. It's kind of interesting that you want to take away the defenses that the district has when the district might be trying to protect its own solvency, particularly when we look at small schools. If you had a school system in a district, K through 12, and there was 120 kids in the whole thing, and they took 10 of them out, they just took $300,000 away from that district. Why? Because that district was getting $30,000 per child. You think that's improving public education? I think the argument ought to be, how does the charter school, paid for by public funds, improve public education? If you can show me that, I'll join in with the coach and I'll support a couple of the amendments. But until you can prove to me that taking money away from the public schools so that they have fewer children to advance a school that has, as it says, a family does not believe in the existing public school system is serving their children. A family. That's the nucleus for a charter school. Is that the motive that we, with a constitutional provision, not once, not twice, not three times, four times it states that our funds, our general funds, our public funds, will not go to anything except the public school. I understand the devious route that we've taken to get around that, but we have parochial schools, and they're good parochial schools. They're doing a fine job, and they're doing a fine job right within my own community. We have special schools. We have the alternative school, which had the highest rating of writing in the entire state, an alternative school where children were having a tough time in writing. We talk about I'm not going to duplicate and spend the time of repeating what my friend from Natrona County has said, but I would point out one thing, that one public school in the state of Wyoming received national honors that it was one of the best 100 school systems in the United States of America. Only one in Wyoming, zero in Montana. So if you think you could improve on that by such measures as this, then I guess maybe my time is due on and opposed to the bill.
Question have being called. All those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 52 do pass, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay, or no?
No.
The House Bill 52 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Division having been called, all those in favor of House Bill 52, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. House Bill 52 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 23. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 23, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to sex offender registration and notification. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Throne, No, Brechtel, Nicholas, Beasley. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Esquivel, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, excused, Edmonds, Harshman. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 23 do pass. And I further move the adoption of Standing Committee Amendment 1. And for an explanation of both the bill and the amendment, I would turn it over to the representative from District 11.
Thank you, Chairman Brown. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today, we bring you updates to our sex offender registration requirements. This is a topic that your committee number one considered over the interim. In 2007, in response to a tragic incident in a southern state involving, I believe it was the death of a child, a federal statute was passed to drastically change sex offender registration requirements across the country. The state of Wyoming in 2007, my first year here, adopted basically the heart of this law. Since then, we've done some tinkering. And then these are some final updates required based on a federal review of our statute. The standing committee amendment which I know we've received a lot of emails on, the main feature of the Standing Committee Amendment was to remove the requirement for juveniles to register. And these are juveniles who are adjudicated as juveniles, not juveniles who are tried as adults. Juveniles for really serious crimes frequently are tried as adults, and in those cases would fall under the registration requirement. I support this feature of the Standing Committee Amendment because not that we might not ever want to register juveniles, but it's my belief that during the interim we did not, as far as this particular topic was concerned, have enough discussion to really evaluate the pros and cons of registering juveniles, because the registration for the more serious crimes is a lifetime registration, and you never come off. And so we need to be really careful in how that applies to juveniles. The original bill made a compromise with juveniles that we would require registration of juveniles, but the information wouldn't be publicized. It would pretty much be on a need-to-know basis, law enforcement, schools, and the like. But we didn't really have enough discussion, in my opinion, as to what that really meant. So the Standing Committee Amendment removes juveniles completely, and I think it's a topic that the committee will need to revisit and to discuss in more depth. Because on the one hand, you've got the really serious juvenile offender that perhaps should be registered so the public is aware. On the other hand, you have a less serious juvenile offender who's gone through rehabilitation, perhaps was molested as a child themselves, and then we register them and we put them in such a socially isolated situation that we probably risk encouraging recidivism rather than doing anything to protect the public. So those are the sort of competing policy interests. The remainder of the Standing Committee Amendment is pretty much just clarification on the age requirements to make sure they're clear. And I guess at this point, it might be worthwhile to see if there are any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment. And if they're not, I'd call for the question.
Questions for Representative Throne? Question having been called, you have heard the motion of the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready? Well, excuse me. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment passes. Back to the bill as a whole. Representative Throne.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we have a committee of the whole amendment, but I think I'll finish with the explanation, quick explanation of the bill. You should have in your box somewhere a sheet that looks like this, with a lot of numbers. Those are the various code provisions from Title VI that apply. And then there are, and I want to thank the good former chairman of Judiciary from the land of the Tetons for putting this together, because this is not in my skill set to put something like this together. But it's a very easy way to understand the bill. Essentially, there are three categories of registration required. Subsection G is the least restrictive. It requires an annual report and annually reporting to the local law enforcement officials. And then on the right column, you see how the bill adjusts the categories. Subsection H is the medium category and requires you to report every 6 months. Subsection J, the last category on the sheet, and it's obvious, I think you can tell those are the more serious crimes. And that also, and I'll have someone correct me if I'm wrong, it requires you to report every three months. And if you're registering on that list, you don't ever come off the registration. And if you look at the bill, it's essentially, in addition to those changes, there are some
some cleanup amendments, and the addition of the requirement on page 13 that the registration must also include the physical address of the employer and the physical address of any educational institution where the registrant is a student. That's a very general view of the bill in the interests of time. And then I mean, go to the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Thank you, Representative Throne. On the Committee of the Whole Amendment 1, Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. And let me say sort of at the outset, I appreciate this bill. I know that in my own family we bring up the list on the Internet and look at who in our neighborhood are registered on these lists, and my boys can tell you where the bad man on the corner is and where they shouldn't go near. And so this is something that I think is a great help, but it's that same thing, that same aspect, that sort of modern scarlet letter that we have to be very careful of, and we have to be very sensitive of when we're including offenses under this provision. And I mean, we don't want to do two things. We don't want to dilute the designation of a sex offender to such a degree that it ceases to cause the concern that it should, but we also don't want to really mark people for life when their offenses don't justify it. And you'll see on page 7, line 3, we have added in a provision where you will be listed as a sex offender if you violate 64201A3. And this is under the public indecency statutes. And what that provides for is if you engage in sexual conduct in public, it says, in sexual conduct, anyone who engages in sexual conduct with the intent of arousing, sexual desire, et cetera, in a public place, they are guilty under A3. And what you can see is a series of scenarios where, I mean, maybe you have an over-amorous couple in a city park or something like that, where they would definitely be in violation of this statute and could, in fact, be prosecuted and sentenced under the statute, but they would also be subject to the sex offender registration designation, which, in my mind, doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, certainly we don't condone that sort of activity, but we need to make sure that the punishment fits the crime as well. And so I would just encourage you to adopt the Standing Committee of, the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to the bill.
Anyone wish to speak on the Committee of the Whole Amendment 1? Question? Oh, Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I'm probably going to get this wrong, so please bear with me. But I would move to amend the amendment brought by the good representative, Mr. Stubson, for the same reason but for a different statute. As currently drafted, the statute also includes, and I'm trying to find it here, that this is a motion I made during committee, and it's the reason I voted against the bill, but and if this, Mr. Representative Stubson can help me, this, it also includes a misdemeanor charge of battery that's currently listed in the Adam Walsh Act. And that particular, it's not a sexual offense. It has no relation as it could be, but it's not a sexual offense. And once again, I'm struggling because I got to grab the statute number, but Mr. Representative Stepson can help me with that if he knows.
Actually, before we go that far, I would just like to make a point of order. If it's more than a technical amendment, it might be best to be handled at a future reading and submit it. So I'm not sure if that would qualify as a technical amendment or not.
Mr. Chair, you mean by through a submission on second reading?
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I would withdraw the motion.
I think it might just be cleaner that way, Representative Nicholas. Yep, thank you. The amendment to the amendment is withdrawn. Back on the original amendment Committee of the Whole Amendment 1. Any further discussion? Question has been called and will be recognized. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Back on the bill. Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got a ton of emails from the city where I live on the banks of the Green River. During the interim, you came up with this bill, and then in your committee hearing, you deleted requiring specified juveniles to register as sex offenders. That's the email I've been getting, and it's why did we take this out? It's not like these bad actors were down shoplifting penny candy or borrowed the neighbor's car and went on a joyride. These juveniles are sex offenders. And I would just like to know why this was removed in committee. Thank you.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to my good colleague from the southwest part of the state, we felt like there were many complicated policy issues related to the juveniles. There's a certain class of juveniles that you definitely would not want to register because it would interfere with their rehabilitation. It would lead to manifest injustice. There may be a certain class of individuals who were adjudicated as juveniles, as sex offenders, but it's that really do represent a long-term threat to society, but that class of folks is small. So I think we took juveniles out for now, and there may be an amendment down the road to bring them back in. We took them out for now because we felt like we hadn't really fully considered all the policy ramifications of including juveniles, and that it really merited further consideration. I think the trend of the last several years in this body and in this state in terms of juvenile justice has really been focused on rehabilitating juveniles and making sure they get the right services, and putting them on a public register where every kid they see in school and every buddy they run into in the mall is going to know that they're a registered sex offender is not really conducive to getting them the help they need. So that was the balancing act.
Representative Gingrey. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will probably be bringing a second reading amendment to put juveniles back in, perhaps not all of them. As you know, there's three different levels, G, H, and J, J being the most serious, J being your forcible rape, first-degree rape. Those perhaps should be registrable offenses. In the interim, juveniles was in the bill. There was an exception put in that they would not be put on the website. There was a concern that other kids would see their picture on the website, and then that person would actually become a victim themselves. So that was one way of protecting that juvenile defendant. However, there is a concern that the public should be aware after that person has served their sentence that they are potentially a recidivist that could be a harm to other children or other people, because they actually could be adults too. So I think we should have that discussion, but perhaps on second reading to discuss the juvenile issue. I would also point out that by not putting the juveniles back in, it'll bump us out of compliance with what's called SORNA. SORNA is the federal law, the Adam Walsh Act. What happened is the Adam Walsh Act passed. They give it to us, to all the states, to implement. We did, because we, if you recall, we spent a lot of time, I believe the good speaker was the chairman of judiciary at that time, and we spent a lot of time creating the original statute. It then takes about 2 or 3 years, actually, for the Department of Justice to go around all the states and do their evaluation. They then sent us a letter earlier this year telling us which parts of the federal law we were out of compliance with, meaning that Wyoming does not comply with the federal sex offender registration. This was an attempt, this bill was an attempt to get us into compliance with the federal Adam Walsh Act. So we need to be careful which things we take out, that there is a concern of not being in compliance with that law. There's really no penalty for it, for not being in compliance, other than you do lose some funds, but they were very minimal. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I thank the good speaker pro tem for filling in the federal information. The monetary effect of not being in compliance was $80,000 a year. It was really modest in the whole scheme of things. And it's also fair to say that other states are still struggling with how to deal with these kinds of issues. So we're not alone in the fact that we are not in substantial compliance yet.
Any further debate or discussion on the bill? Question has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 23 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. House Bill 23 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 106. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 106, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to government reorganization, Departments of Employment and Workforce Services merger. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbuto, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 106 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments, both of which I will leave the explanation to the fine sponsor of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Harvey. Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chairman Harvey. The bill before you is conceptually I think we've probably heard a lot about. I suppose for me personally, for several years, I have wondered why Workforce Services and the Department of Employment were ever separated, and have thought maybe it was time to start talking about putting them back together again, because they both serve workers. They both provide services to those seeking job training, needing unemployment, and then there are some regulatory functions like OSHA and MSHA within the Department of Employment. This wasn't an idea that I pursued until this summer when I asked our fine LSO staff to draft me a bill. I thought it made more sense to wait till a change in administration before considering a reorganization. I didn't really pursue the idea in discussions with anybody until after the election, at which point I discovered that the new gentleman in the main office on the first floor wanted to do the same thing. So then I started working on a bill to address his plans. Essentially, this isn't complicated. There are sort of three ways, roughly, you can put these two agencies back together again, and then there's a question of how quickly you do it. You could absorb Workforce Services into the Department of Employment. My original draft did that, and I was told by folks in Workforce Services that would make everyone feel uncomfortable, cause morale problems, and it would be viewed as a hostile takeover, which would not facilitate the provision of services. The other way to do it then, of course, is to absorb the Department of Employment into the Department of Workforce Services. Again, that's just sort of a hostile takeover by Workforce Services. So to deal with this issue, I drafted the bill as a merger of the two agencies. A friendly consolidation of the two agencies. And the original House Bill 106, just in the interests of maybe not confusing the public, I named the new agency the Department of Employment and Workforce Services. The standing committee amendment, after further discussions with the interim director of the Department of Employment and the current director of Workforce Services, the standing committee amendment changes the name of the new agency to the Department of Workforce Services, because that's the brand that's in the field offices, and it just seemed like it might be more cost-effective to use that name, and that it wouldn't be too confusing to the public that needed to deal with the employment folks. So that's the standing committee amendment, is essentially to make the name of the new agency the Department of Workforce Services. And sort of the second issue to consider is, how quickly do you do this? In the past, government reorganizations have been on sort of a two-year schedule. But again, when I found that our new top executive was pretty much had decided that this was something he really wanted to do, put this bill on the fast track so that the merger would become effective July 1st, 2011. If you look at page 3 of the bill in the Section 2 language, subsections A and B deal with the transition period. Subsection A provides for the governor to appoint one person to serve as joint director of the Department of Employment and the director of Department of Workforce Services until July 1, 2011. That essentially has already happened. And then the joint director under subsection B plans for the merger. And those sections, of course, become effective immediately. And then subsection C is just sort of the mechanics in our statutes for how you deal with the money, the positions, and all of that. So that's the basic concept. And I guess the question is, why do we want to go through this? First of all, I think it makes sense for people who are seeking jobs or need unemployment insurance to only have to go to one agency. That's the basic principle. I suppose the second question might be is, will this really save a lot of money? You'll notice the fiscal note doesn't project that at this time. And certainly it's sort of indeterminate at this point. I think probably over the transition period, as the agencies are consolidated, there might be areas for savings. But one specific area for savings that we can quantify at this point is obviously if we only have one director, we're only paying one director's salary. So I did ask LSO to provide an estimate of that for me. And roughly a director's salary plus benefits is around $150,000 a year or $300,000 a biennium. So I think it's safe to predict at this point that we would save roughly $300,000 a year and perhaps more as the new agency works through its reorganization. And I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Representative Throne. We'll start with the Standing Committee Amendment. Questions on the Standing Committee Amendment? Question has been called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the main bill. Further discussion on House Bill 106. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to know why you called it Department of Workforce Services rather than Department of Employment and Workforce Services. To me, Employment and Workforce Services connotates the departments going together, and if people are looking for jobs and so forth, just seems that you'd go to the Department of Employment. So I'd like to ask that question.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question. That was more to perhaps save some money in terms of marketing and rebranding, because Department of Workforce Services, as sort of the outreach wing, has been the agency that goes out and markets itself and has field offices called Department of Workforce Services. The Department of Employment does not have that same sort of field operation. So it was a suggestion that it might be more cost effective to go with Department of Workforce Services. I think folks will still be able to find those Department of Employment Services fairly easily, but certainly that's something we can continue to discuss.
Any further debate or discussion on House Bill 106? Question has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 106 do pass, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 106 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration this afternoon is House Bill 124. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 124, introduced by the Transportation Committee. An act relating to the military, National Guard emergency deployment professional licensing. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Quarberg, Vranish, Swanitzer, Dave, No, Botten, signed representing Quarberg, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Quarberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 124 do pass. And I further move the Standing Committee amendment, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendment. And I would like to turn the explanation of this bill over to my good colleague from House District number 9.
Representative Dave Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chairman of the Transportation Committee. I think we'll just start with the Standing Committee amendment. Basically, all it does is take away the effective date of July 1st of 2011 and puts in the common nomenclature of the fact that it becomes effective law as soon as possible, and I would go ahead and call the question on that one.
Any debate or discussion on Standing Committee Amendment 1? Seeing none, question has been called and will be recognized. All those in favor of adopting Standing Committee 1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 124 simply allows the National Guard, their membership, the people that are from out of state, the shield of not having to get a licensure or certificate for the state of Wyoming. And it's just that simple. You probably have noticed this bill kind of at the bottom of your general file list, and that's because we have been waiting for some technical correct language, which we have finally received. And so, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay, I would like to go ahead and withdraw Standing Committee Amendment Number, or not Standing Committee, the whole Amendment Number 1, as the fact that it's incorporated in Amendment Number 2.
Seeing no objection, it is so ordered. Representative Botten.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole Amendment 2 and now ask for favorable consideration, and I'll explain that amendment. The original bill is designed to handle some emergency situations that our National Guard might respond to. It's a bill that addresses sometimes when on active duty to respond to emergencies such as floods, blizzards, other state emergencies where perhaps our National Guard might find themselves in problems with licensure requirements of the state. And during our committee meeting last Thursday evening, I voted against this bill. And the reason for that was I thought it was too broad. Read in its entirety, this bill, 124, if not amended, would have allowed any number of perversions, such as private first class high school graduates performing services as doctors, performing surgery, prescribing narcotic medication. It was just a bit too broad. But, you know, I might have gone to law school, but I just couldn't think of language at that moment in time to amend it. So that's my failing. But the following day, driving home, it finally dawned on me. So over the course of the next few days, I worked with representative of the National Guard to try to perfect some language to prevent that perversion, but also to address their very important need. And so the amendment has two parts and completely replaces the language in the bill as originally proposed. The first part allows anybody who serves in the Wyoming National Guard but holds a professional license in another state to be able to do those professional services while the National Guard is on a state active duty for a state emergency without having to comply with our state's licensure requirements. In doing that, we know that those folks are trained so that if there's a doctor, say, who's licensed in Montana and just happens to be either attached or in as a member of the Wyoming National Guard, and there's a state emergency, well, by golly, that doctor is trained and could perform whatever doctor services might be necessary for that very short period of time. And nobody's going to be exposed to any harm as a result of that. So part one is covered. The second part, and this comes from the National Guard's specific concern, they have apparently been addressed specifically about during times of National Guard active duty, for these emergencies, medics are performing various medical services, and gosh, they don't have EMT licenses. As a former Army medic, I can tell you they have a lot of training, but yet they don't have that license or that certificate. So the second part of the amendment would cover that aspect as well as some others that might arise. So in the military, there's something called a military occupational specialty, a MOS. Anybody who has an MOS in the National Guard can perform that function that they serve in the National Guard without meeting licensure requirements in the state of Wyoming. And that's simply covering them so they can perform their job. I don't know if you've ever looked at the list of professions under Title 33. There are now 46 of them, ranging from midwife and athletic trainers and geologists and lawyers and podiatrists and chiropractors. And well, the concern, if this is adopted, would be wiped out. Our troops would be able to perform their jobs without running into another section of our government telling them they can't. So I'd be willing to stand for your questions, if any.
Any questions on the House Committee of the Whole Amendment 2? Question has been called and will be recognized. All those in favor of House Committee of the Whole Amendment 2, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. The amendment is adopted. Back to the bill. Representative Dave Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the fine representative from House District 3 in describing the amendment pretty much describes the bill. And so if there's no other questions, I would call for the question.
Question has been called for and will be recognized. All those in favor of Chairman Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 124 do pass, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 124 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The Committee of the Whole will be at ease until the sound of the gavel. That wasn't much ease. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you would move House Bill 49 down to below House Bill 158.
Thank you. The next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 157. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 157, introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to property conveyances, abolition of worthier title doctrine. This bill is referred to Committee No. 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 157 do pass. And I will explain the bill. There is a quite lengthy explanation involving the common law. There is a truncated explanation that simply says, by abolishing the rule against worthier title, we allow a grantor to pass interest and trust for the benefit of a particularly beneficiary, and then at the beneficiary's death, allow those beneficial interests to pass to the beneficiary's descendants without a possible failure under the doctrine. It's a bill that was brought to us by a group of estate planning attorneys, and that's my explanation, Mr. Chairman. Unless somebody wants one deeper, I'll stand for any questions.
Any questions for Chairman Brown? Representative Greer.
Thank you, Chairman. For the good chairman of the judiciary, just for my knowledge, could you distinguish the doctrine of worthier title with the rule in Shelley's case for me, please?
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I cannot.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, the gentleman from across the hill is an old friend, and he was on the Corporations Committee, and I trusted him implicitly. I don't know what the heck he's saying. Would you? And I don't have your lengthy whatever in my desk. So would you try to do it for me in layman's terms?
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, the doctrine of worthier title is a product of English common law, intended to prohibit the creation of a remainder interest in land for the heirs of a person conveying property outright or in trust, and the creation of a remainder interest in heirs of a beneficiary following a life interest of that beneficiary. Here's a simple explanation. We do something in trust law called special needs trust. This is serious stuff. These are trusts for developmentally disabled persons, incompetent persons, and other kinds of persons who qualify for government aid, primarily, I think, Social Security and Medicaid. When they're receiving that government aid, they are entitled to limited support, outside support from private sources. If that support is too extensive, they're then disqualified from receiving Social Security and Medicare. In these special needs trusts, this issue has come up, that we adopted the laws that existed in England in 1607, which included the doctrine of worthier title. And it was a scheme by which, when there were remaindermen, those remainder interests didn't vest. It went back to the original grantor, and the king or the overlord could pick it off. It still remains in our common law. It's an anachronism. But what it potentially can do is defeat the purpose in these special needs trusts, which is to say that perhaps a parent is dying and has substantial assets and has one of these children who qualifies for those needs. And so they need to set up a special needs trust that will take care of that child and then goes to that child's heirs after that child's deceased. The doctrine of worthier title would defeat that. The trust would work in benefit of the child, but upon the child's death, it wouldn't go to the heirs. It would kick back, then it gets into an estate, and it's a mess. And so the purpose of this is simply to fulfill the natural intention that one would have if they set up a special needs trust.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you. I appreciate the explanation. I call for the question.
Question has been called and will be recognized. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 157 do pass, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 157 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Would you move House Bill 49 down below House Bill 159?
So ordered.
What that means in real language is we won't do House Bill 49 today because the good chairman has been summoned downstairs. My intent is to go to the end of House Bill 159.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. The next bill for our consideration this afternoon is House Bill 158. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 158, introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to property rule against perpetuities. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Throne. No, Nicholas Peasley. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 158 pass, and I will explain the bill. Moving right along. This is a change in existing law. It is not new law. We made a change, I think, in 2003, of major policy proportions in our state. We said that we are going to maintain what's called the rule against perpetuities with respect to real property. And the rule against perpetuities is quite complicated, but in a simple sense, it simply says that an interest must vest at all within the lifetime of a person in being plus 21 years. It's a fascinating topic if you like that sort of stuff, and there's a law school thing. There's a case about the fertile octogenarian. I mean, it gets ridiculous. So then we said, with respect to personal property, we're not going to recognize that rule anymore. And it's another rule we inherited with the common law. And we said, well, with respect to personal property, we're not going to recognize that rule. And in committee, there was some discussion that about the propriety of that policy change. All I can say in that regard is we made that change, and that's not what this bill is about. It could certainly be made an issue by a bill that would purport to reverse this. But until that takes place, that is not what this is about. In our rule against perpetuities with respect to personal property, where we said they could last up to 1,000 years, our language says that it's not 1,000 years unless we say it's 1,000 years. That is creating problems under the Internal Revenue Code. And so this language reverses that and says it is 1,000 years unless you say it's not. And it makes a big difference in how property interests and trusts that are set up using this are treated by the Internal Revenue Code. So there is a lengthier explanation if anyone would wish to have it. I'll stand for questions and see where that goes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Brown. Questions for Chairman Brown? Question has been called and will be recognized. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 158 do pass, please signify by aye. Opposed, no. House Bill 158 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 159. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 159, introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to the Uniform Trust Code amendments. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 159 do pass. And I will explain the bill. This contains a number of changes, amendments that are not major to the Uniform Trust Code. The first one appears on page 2 at the top, and it amends section 505.1. Actually, I think it creates 505.1. The purpose of this change in the Uniform Trust Code is to protect property over which a person has a power of appointment or some other right of withdrawal from a trust. And it simply says that creditors of that individual cannot attach the property in the trust until that power of appointment is either exercised or the withdrawal is made. The mere fact that they possess a power does not subject that property to creditors. The second part of this is on page 3, and it's an amendment to Section 504. And the purpose of this change is also protection from creditors. And it says that if a trustee follows the trust terms and makes distributions directly to a third party for the benefit of a beneficiary, such as paying their medical bills, that those distributions do not subject the property that remains in the trust to attachment by creditors. The third change is to Section 506, and that is on page 4. That amendment to the Uniform Trust Code involves irrevocable trusts and efforts under the Internal Revenue Code to use the maximum, what's called the AEA, the applicable exclusion, amount for both spouses, where the value of, where the wealth of the spouses is disparate. And one spouse can qualify for the exclusion amount, but the other can't. And so there is an accepted estate planning method where an irrevocable trust is created for the less wealthy spouse. The more wealthy spouse puts funds in there, it's irrevocable, so it's the property of the less wealthy spouse and qualifies their estate for the full exclusion. The concern comes if the less wealthy spouse dies first. And as the trust code is written, there's some danger that that amount might come back to the wealthier spouse and defeat the tax planning method, which is to maximize the AEA as to both spouses. So the purpose of this is to remove this provision from the, or possibility from the Uniform Trust Code. The fourth provision is Section 510A4N, and that is, starts on page 4, the change is on page 5, and the purpose of this is, and if you guys really want to get into something fun, we'll work on this. This allows persons to use qualified spendthrift trusts in connection with GRATs and GRUTs. GRATs are grant or retained annuity trusts. GRUTs are grant or retained unit trusts. And I could probably give a lecture that would last into tomorrow sometime on GRATs and GRUTs if you'd care to hear it. So that's my explanation of the bill, Mr. Chairman. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Professor Brown. Any questions for the good chairman? Question has been called and will be recognized. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 159 do pass, please signify by aye. I apologize. We have to do the standing committee amendment first.
I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I just saw that. I move standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 159.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that, Mr. Chairman. Any discussion on standing committee amendment 1? Question on the amendment has been called. All those in favor, please signify by aye. Opposed, no. The amendment's adopted. Back to the bill. Question has been called and will be recognized. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 159 do pass, please signify by aye. Opposed, no. House Bill 159 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole rising and report, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report. Oh, I'm sorry.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 63, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 5, recommended do pass. Representative Lubnow moved that the committee of the whole rise and sit again. House Bill 115, recommended do pass. House Bill 52, recommended do pass. House Bill 23, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 106, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 124, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 157, recommended do pass. House Bill 158, recommended do pass. House Bill 159, amended, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Crone, Chairman.
Representative Crone.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted.
This is one of the best newbies we've ever had.
We're at that order of business, messages from the Senate.
Message number 147, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 65, Animal Remedies, ayes 29, noes 1, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 148, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 67, Guardianship and Wards Sealed Records. Ayes 30, no 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 149. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 81, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. Ayes 30, no 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 150. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 99, sales tax on certain food items. Ayes 30, no 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 151. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 112, National Guard Billeted Soldiers Fund. Ayes 30, no 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 152. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate Joint Resolution number 6, Resolution Environmental Protection Agency Regulations. Ayes 27, noes 3, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 153. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below failed to pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 86, Agriculture Fuel Tax Exemption. Ayes 14, no 16, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 154. Mr. Speaker, a motion to reconsider the bills listed below passed the Senate by the vote indicated. Senate file 86, Agricultural Fuel Tax Exemption. Ayes 12, noes 18. This failed. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 122, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Peasley, no, Nicholas, Throne, absent, Crone, signed Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 145, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Camel, Madden, Peterson, Vronish. No, Childers, Miller, Semlek, excused, Goggles, signed representing Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred the following bill, to whom was referred House Bill 146, respectfully reports back that passed it with amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Camel, Madden, Peterson, Vronish. No, Childers, Miller, Semlek, excused, Goggles, signed representing Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 114, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Signed, Representative Stubson, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 129, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Signed, Representative Stubson, Vice Chairman.
Re-referrals. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer House Bill 129, Nuclear Energy Production Study, to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
It's been moved for House Bill 129 to be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Representative Wallace.
Mr. Speaker, might I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to, I'm delighted to invite you all in the morning. I'm currently the board president of the Wyoming Association of Public Charter Schools, and tomorrow is Charter Schools Rock Day here at the Wyoming Legislature. We are going to have a breakfast catered by the culinary arts students from Triumph High School from here in Cheyenne over at the Hirschler Building at starting at 7 o'clock, room 1699. And from 9 to 9:30, we're going to have a presentation about some of the advocacy efforts that are in trying to promote public charter schools. This is your opportunity to have your questions answered, to talk to people who are involved in these. We have national experts who have just arrived from the National Alliance for Charter Public Schools. We have students from Wyoming charter schools who will be there, teachers, educators, parents. It's a wonderful opportunity, and considering the lively debate of this afternoon, a great opportunity for you to find out more about this exciting effort. Thank you.
Representative Escobar.
Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
I want to let the body know that tomorrow is a real special day as well. We call it the Day of Hope. So when you come into the chamber, you're all going to see yellow daffodils on your desks. And tonight is the reception at the Depot, and it's sponsored by the Wyoming Cancer Comprehensive Cancer Control Consortium, American Cancer Society, Action Network. And also tomorrow they'll be having a lunch in room 699 of the Hirschler Building, where everybody will be able to meet cancer survivors and their families. Thank you.
We're at that order of business committee announcements. Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow at noon, upon noon recess in House 18. We're going to finish discussing the Wyoming Lottery, House Bill 186, then we'll take up House Bill 188, gambling definitions, and we'll take up House Bill 178, vaults, crypts, and mausoleums, perpetual trust funds. And then if time permits, we're going to take up House Bill 179, Energy Improvement Program, and then a further time, House Bill 209, Emergency Medical Review Organizations.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, too, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to hear House Bill 34. These are all re-referred bills, which is Sales and Use Tax Distribution, House Bill 39, Health Litigation Fund, and House Bill 66, Water Development Projects Funding. Thank you.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow, Thursday, January 27th, 10 minutes after adjournment in room H-17. We will hear House Bill 139, Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway, and House Bill 177, Vietnam and Veterans Welcome Home and Thank You Day.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, Judiciary number 1 is going to meet immediately upon adjournment to complete work on the bills that we heard this morning. We will then meet at 6:59 a.m. tomorrow morning, Thursday, to hear the following bills. House Bill 92, Impersonation Through Electronic Means. House Bill 107, Municipal Court Jury Trials. House Bill 123, Circuit Court Surety Bonds Repeal. House Bill 134, Statute of Limitations for Criminal Offenses. House Bill 140, Governmental Immunity, Public Transportation. And House Joint Resolution 3, Resolution to Congress and the United States Supreme Court.
Vice Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet in 15 minutes in room H-17 to consider the following bills. House Bill 103, WICHE Repayment Program. House Bill 99, Substance Abuse Treatment Funding Awards. House Bill 36, Cancer Control Act Amendments. And House Bill 162, OSHA Rule Review.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately upon adjournment in H-10 for consideration of the following bills. House Bill 85, Teacher Suspension. House Bill 182, Student Assessment Measures. And House Bill 155, Student Assessment Amendments.
Chairman Sinlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow morning, January 27th at 7 a.m. in room H-11 to hear House Bill 130, Pregnancy Testing of Livestock. House Bill 152, Very Rare or Uncommon Area Designations. House Bill 151, Hydropower Development. House Bill 135, State Land Improvements 2. And House Bill 174, Designated Transfer of State Lands. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. An announcement. When you get your flowers tomorrow, make sure that you don't put the vases on the wood. There's a retired senator who will haunt you forever if you stain the wood. So please make sure that you don't put the vases directly on the wood. General file for tomorrow will be House Bill 127, House Bill 121, House Bill 120, House Bill 16, House Bill 122, House Bill 49, House Bill 61, House Joint Resolution 6. If you look on your sheet, it says House Bill 49 again. That's supposed to be House Bill 6, the labeling of honey. House Bill 37, House Bill 154, House Bill 114, House Bill 145, House Bill 146, House Bill 82, House Bill 142, House Bill 10, House Bill 22, House Bill 35, House Bill 32, and such other bills as may be referred to Committee of the Whole. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Thursday.